when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Hello, everyone. I am Shelby Gallagher, one of your hosts of Prepping 2.0, joined by my co-host, Glenn Tate. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Shelby.
So excited to have you here with us today. So we have a bunch of things we want to talk about. You are joining us right now in episode 6, and we are calling it The Life Cycle of Gun Ownership. I think we're going to get into some kind of fun topics here. But really quick, we wanted to kind of give you some things to how you can touch base with us. I'm going to give a real fast and furious quick list here. You can check out our website, prepping2-0.com. Still a work in progress. Do not, especially if you are joining us during December 2018, still getting things pulled together. In 2019, you're going to look back and go, oh, it looks so good.
I just came up with a term. This period now, when we're putting out episodes and we have web people and radio producers working furiously, we're going to call those the demo tapes, because the good stuff
exactly.
is there, but the production isn't there.
The production is in progress.
But it's pretty darn good for
a
podcast.
It is, and we have a great team that is there. It's trying to get websites to talk to other websites and look good and all of that. So the other way, I would say this is a great place to start right now. If you go to podbean.com and just search for Prepping 2.0, on there you will find a couple other great places to go. First of all, you'll see episodes. You can listen to episodes from there. But you can also link to Patreon. And the website there, if you can't get to Podbean, is patreon.com/prepping2.0. That's how you can support us. If you like what you're listening to, that helps us keep the lights on. Another great place, and we talked about this in the very beginning stages of this podcast, we want to create communities for people to connect with other preppers. We don't need to invent that. Turns out there's another huge network out there called PrepperNet, where you can easily and privately and avoiding detection sort of things, get in touch with other preppers so that you can team up. And you can catch that on our Podbean website. It's right there at the top. Just click on PrepperNet and you can join up and meet other preppers in your area, which is great. That's what we talk about so much here. I'm going to whiz through this. You go to YouTube, search for Prepping 2.0. You can watch and listen there. KYAH and KNAK Radio in Utah, Utah's Talk Authority. We are on the weekends there, this show that you're listening to.
Hello, Utah. We
Hi,
love Utah.
Utah. Yeah, we love it. More radio stations are coming soon. Our Facebook page is Prepping 2.0 podcast Facebook page. Go look for it. Glenn's Facebook page, 299 Days, the book Facebook page, my Facebook page, Shelby Gallagher, author, and then our dog.
Yeah.
Maddie.
Tate Gallagher. Maddie Tate mm-hmm. Gallagher.
Known as Chompers.
Chompers, yes.
She has her own page, and we just do that for sheer goofiness and silliness, although she and I had an incident here this weekend, December 2018, and I'm feeling the bruising effect of that. So,
and I bet everyone's curious, and I guess you're gonna have to go on
Maddie Tate Gallagher
and find out how a dog caused bruising on you.
Yes, exactly.
And it's a real thing. I'm looking at the bruising right now. It's going down.
It is going down. So you can also get our email newsletter, and that's where we put events that we go to and up-and-coming things and kind of get a little bit more into details about what's going on with books and events and things like that. Sign up for Glenn's newsletter at 299days.com. My newsletter, you can sign up at agreatstate.com, and you can sign up for both of them. We only send you an email once a week, and that's it. We really try to keep it low impact. So, oh my gosh, that was a lot.
That's a lot of stuff. You know, we have another segment we're doing now is review of the last show, and we have people who listened who have some really good comments. Not the last show, but episode 4 was a Medically Fragile, and I made the point, apparently wrongly, and by the way, I love being corrected if it means good information gets out there. I made the point that if you have a prescription, a life-dependent sort of prescription, good luck getting a doctor to write a prescription for more than you need so you can kind of stockpile it over time. Because I said doctors don't do that. I was wrong. There's one that does. Please read this. This is great information you guys have to hear, especially if you or somebody you love has a prescription they have to take and you're thinking, how the heck do I get a stockpile of that prescription medicine? Take it away, Shelby.
So this is a message. We got a message from a doctor himself, and I'm just going to read it to you. And I love, you can tell he's Southern because he spells out the words that I'm going to say. So this is what he says. Just listen to the episode about medical fragility. You all were talking about ways to store extra medicine. I'm a physician, and what I do for people sometimes is write a higher dose and have the patient half it. For instance, if they take 25 milligrams of blah, 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 because I cannot pronounce this medication. For instance, if they take 25 milligrams of blah, 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 twice a day, I'll give them 50 milligrams and tell them to take half a tablet twice a day. But I'll actually write the prescription for 50 milligrams and take one tab twice a day. That way, they will get 2 months for each month prescription, and they can rotate each month to keep the longest expiration dates at the back of the line. Also, some patients are willing to pay cash and not go through insurance, which is often a limiting factor. Yes, sorry, Bob, it is. I think that's a controlling factor in a lot of ways. If they are, they could ask for two prescriptions from their doctor, one to run through the insurance and one to pay cash for.
This is brilliant.
It is brilliant, absolutely. Over time, if you did this a few times a year, you'd have a 3 to 6 month surplus. Maybe not enough to make it through some long-term disaster, but certainly could get you through a short-term one. I love this because I can see a conversation, somebody walking into their doctor's office and going, you know, especially here, let's just say the Pacific Northwest, although natural disasters happen everywhere, just especially with Alaska, the major Alaska earthquake that just happened a week or two ago, and say, you know what? On the news, it says all the time I need to prepare for a natural disaster like an earthquake. I want to talk to you about how I can stockpile about a 3 to 6 month supply of medications, maybe even up to a year, because I know, like with infrastructure and stuff. I mean, look, these people in paradise that live in paradise, they're not
paradise, California,
where
not
they just
the actual paradise.
Yes, where they just had
the
major.
If it's in California, it's not actually.
There's
paradise,
no paradise
right?
in California, literally now. You know, and just kind of use the headlines and leverage them a little bit, and how you just want to have a stockpile. I don't know that every doctor would do this for you, but I think doctors might be willing to work with you. So I love that we heard this great feedback.
We have the most awesome listeners. They are smart and informed, and they feel like they can reach out to us, which we encourage, and I love it. So we're going to keep doing this. When we have a really good listener feedback thing with some information you can use, we're going to put it out to you. So on to the topic of episode 6, life cycle of gun ownership. This is not just the life cycle that you and I went through. It's not storytelling, although there is part
of that.
That's what we do.
It.
We tell stories.
Yes, we do.
But it's also for those of you out there maybe who have got a lot of guns and you've gone through this life cycle, we would like you to kind of go back in time and remember the first time you got a gun, what you were thinking. And this is really aimed at how you, as a gun owner who have gone through the life cycle of gun ownership, can help others start their life cycle of gun ownership. So even if you got a million guns, you're going to get something out of this. And I'm going to briefly summarize the stages. We'll talk more about each one, but I like to give folks an idea of where we're going. Number one is thinking about even getting a gun. Number two is getting your first gun. Number three is the four-gun battery. Number four is training and practicing with your four-gun battery. Number five is personalizing and collecting firearms. That's the fun stage. And number six is the high level we all hope to get to, and that is I don't need any more guns.
I don't want to get to that level.
That's why you're the awesomest wife in the world. You never want to hear me say, I don't need any more guns.
No.
So those are the six stages. And Shelby, you've got some real thoughts, and it's covered in your books too, especially A Woman's Perspective. Tell us about the process you went through about thinking about even getting your first gun.
That's a great thing. And I'm glad you brought that up, because the if you read book one, A Great State, The Divide, Julie, my main character, goes through a very similar journey that I did in terms of thinking about getting a firearm and carrying a firearm, specifically as a handgun. I think what did it for me, it was a long time ago, because I've been carrying firearms for quite a while now. It was about 8 or 10 years ago, and this is the example that really was a forefront for me. I have two kids, and at the that's what it is for me as a woman, protecting not just myself in an environment, but my kids. And as a woman with kids, you're vulnerable because someone can hurt not just you, but your kids too. And if you can't even protect yourself, you can't protect your kids. So here's the story that got my attention and just resonated with me. Oregon Zoo, if you've ever been in Portland, and it doesn't even need to be the Oregon Zoo, but it could be a zoo, because those are, in the middle of summer, those are busy parking lots. Those are busy, a lot of people, a lot of kids, a lot of parents. And there's a story of a woman packing her kids up in the car, little kids, the car seats and the crying and the I'm thirsty and I want and all of that. And a guy comes up to her as she's in. When you're packing kids in a car, your back is to the public. I think you're very vulnerable. And this is what happened. A guy comes up behind her and demands with a knife, now that I recall, that I'm going to rape you. And I'm going to rape you right here. And she screamed and cried. And luckily, people in the parking lot came to her assistance. That you cannot count on that.
Not in Oregon.
We can't count on that in general. People don't tend to do that. And she lived and survived, and the kids are fine. Everybody's fine. But that was harrowing. And I just remember thinking, I don't know that I could defend myself in a situation like that with a knife. Knife is pretty, in close quarters with a knife, the danger factor is very high. And I remember that kind of got the ball rolling in my head. How do I do this? What do I do?
And I have a story that I don't think I've ever told. It's one of the few parts of my journey from suburban slug to prepper that isn't in the book. But the reason I thought about getting a gun, I should back up. Everyone who's read or listened to 299 Days knows that I grew up with guns, grew up in the country, 22s, 30-30 for deer hunting, all that stuff.
It's mostly rifles, though. That's
yeah,
what goes
exactly.
Out, yes.
Yeah. And then I got suburban, I got fat, I got comfortable, turned into kind of a useless person.
Turned into a city guy.
City guy. And anyway, so, but as far as handguns go and protecting myself, so it's probably about 15 years ago, and the Iraq War is raging, and I live in Olympia, which is one of the most left-wing, kooky, nutty cities in the United States. By the way, Google Olympia and riots, or Olympia and Antifa, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So there was the usual weekend, I don't know, riot and mayhem in Olympia. They were protesting the port of Olympia was using its ships to ship materiel over to Iraq for the war. It's a Saturday, it's sunny. I'm picking up my daughter from ballet, cute little Amanda, redhead, cute as a button. She's probably about 5, 6, 7 at this time. And we're leaving ballet in downtown Olympia, and there's a protest going on, of course. And then something happened that I hadn't seen before. People with bandanas over their faces, which is terrifying, by the way. It's designed to be, and doggone, it's effective, because there's something about that. When you see that, when you see pictures of it, it doesn't do justice. When you see somebody around you with a bandana, like a bunch of them, black bandanas, it's game on. So I got nervous.
Well, and let me just, to the numbing down thing, at that time it was terrifying. Now it's normal.
Yeah, now it's like, exactly.
Antifa, they're up to their old tricks again. Anyway, go ahead,
exactly.
Continue.
So I'm at an intersection, and these people start dragging a trash can dumpster across the intersection to block people in. And they're coming from my left, and I can turn to my right. And I thought, oh, heck no, that ain't happening.
No.
Not today. I'm with my daughter. And that I'm in full-on fight for my family mode. I turn right kind of aggressively, probably not legally, don't even care. And I got out of the way, and I saw them pull the trash dumpster and trap a bunch of other people. By the way, they ended up not killing anybody. Oh,
or harming
gee.
Well.
Yeah, we got lucky that day, right? So I go zooming down the street. I'm thinking, boy, I'm getting out of here. And I go by another intersection, and there's a log truck, and these people with black bandanas are banging on the door trying to get the driver to come out. I was like Reginald Denny mode, right, from the LA riots. It was flashing through my head. I thought, they're going to kill this dude. And so I thought, I got to go help this guy. Oh, that's right. I don't have
with your pencil sharpener.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. With some sharp words. Hey, you miscreants,
don't do that.
And it was that moment that I said, okay, I'm going to keep a gun in my car. I'm going to do that and lock it up. Right. I got kids, blah, blah, blah. It's legal with a concealed pistol license, blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to do this. I have a need for the first time in my life. My comfortable little life was shattered. I have a need for a firearm. And I went out, got a pistol, and that was about 77 guns ago.
And but, he's not far off.
So that's about thinking about getting your gun. Well, the next step is getting your first gun. Yeah. And before we go into the how and how other people get their first gun and how you as a shooter can help them, an extremely quick, short version of what guns to get. First of all, describe the thing about guns fitting like jeans from your book, because that says it all for ladies in particular.
And that I use this in my first book because it's based on a true incident where someone told me, you know what, for a woman in particular, handguns are like jeans and they fit each person differently, and what fits on you doesn't fit on another person. And that's true, because all handguns are all different brands, different everything. You know, Levi's don't fit me like whatever, you know, same with firearms. And especially women, because calibers have such an effect on how well we can shoot, because we're not as strong. We don't have the wrist and this hand power and the strength power that men have. So, and also too, we have to conceal these things. In the story that I give in my book where someone says, hey, if you're going to carry, you should carry a burr. And I'm like, yeah, and tip over, put that on my body and I will tip over from the weight, and there's no way it's going to be concealed. It will look like I have, I don't know, some sort of medical device hanging out of my side, right? So that's where it's true.
Even with men, and we're generally larger, and the clothes we wear are more adaptable, more capable of carrying. I mean, I'm wearing T-shirt and jeans right now, and I have a Glock 27 on me. And
a whole bunch of mags.
Two 15-round magazines, and you can't even tell. I think that 380 is pretty much your absolute smallest caliber. By the way, if you only feel comfortable or only can afford or only can comfortably shoot a 22, get a 22.
Yeah.
Get
something's
a gun.
Better than nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can refine it, you can figure out what's better, and then
practice forward
a couple years, you'll have 77 guns and be the neighborhood weirdo like me.
Poof, you'll beat Glenn.
Exactly. So do that, but 380 as a minimum. Yeah. We'll probably do a whole show on this later, but I just, since we're on the topic of getting your first gun, we thought we'd squeeze this in. I think 9mm is a fantastic caliber for a variety of reasons. It's powerful enough.
Well, and let me say this about 9mm. I have both. I carry a 380 and a 9mm.
Not at the same time.
Not at the same time. Although I probably could.
Oh, you should.
I could. I've got the, I can do that. Anyway, that just opened up a whole new show right there.
Ultimate wife, guys. Ultimate wife.
But 9mm for women, ladies, there are 9mm that you can carry and they can conceal. So let me just throw that out there.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. There's always the question of revolvers versus semi-automatic pistols. Revolvers don't carry a lot of capacity. They often are in lower powered cartridges, so they don't blow your, you know, they don't shake your hand off.
If you put a higher caliber into a higher caliber
cartridge
into a small revolver, it hurts.
Yeah, like a scandium framed little 357 is very unpleasant, which means you won't train and practice with it, which we'll get to in a moment.
Yes.
So revolvers, probably not a go-to. That being
said, they're hard to conceal too.
They're hard to conceal because they're wide. That being said, if that's all you have, and that's all you feel comfortable with, by all means, get a revolver.
It fits you. It fits you, so do it.
Get a gun. So I think semi-automatic, 9mm, pretty standard. I think 45 ACP is just too big for a lot of people. If you're the guy, usually, that can handle the 45, awesome. More takedown power. And so those are some things about, you know, getting your first gun, what to get. So how do people go about getting their first gun?
I love this, because, and I think we should almost do a real quick here, and we've got some time to do this, what not to do and what to do.
Yes.
And this is what someone did for me years ago when after I was like talking to friends of mine that I know their stuff in firearms.
And you want, gun guys out there, you want to be the people she's about to describe. That's your goal. Be these people.
Great couple that I know. He is a Vietnam combat vet, 4 Purple Stars.
Purple Hearts.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Purple Hearts, yes. He's seen nasty stuff and experienced it. And they're one of these people that they're at level 5. They are personalizing, collecting. They can never have enough guns there. And they offered to me, hey, and she, the wife, has her favorite concealed carry. And she's like, hey, let's go out to the range and we'll bring a bunch of stuff and you can just try. Just try it out. Try on jeans. It's like going into the fitting room. And it was awesome. Super safe. Super awesome. Learned all I needed to do to just try out firearms at that point. Certainly was not training. This was try it out. And she, the wife of this couple, carried a SIG P238, and I loved it. She's like, you're going to like it. I think you're going to like it because it's very comfortable to fire. It doesn't hurt. It's concealable. It's cute little pistol. And she's right. I loved it. Now, what if I had gone out there and said, no, I don't think I like that one. I like this one. She would have been all for it. She was very much like this. I want you to carry something. And so that is what I have carried since then. And one of the reasons why I chose that one, keep in mind, I'm a newbie at the time. I had the thumb safety. I will say this now, I've grown. And that's part of the point of this. I'm now to the point like Glock. I'm happy to try that. I'm looking at other things to add to my collection. But that's where I was at. And as a newbie, when you're first new to this, I see a lot of women, rightfully so, I want a safety just for that extra layer of confidence.
And that's okay. Into it. Do what you did, which is get the gun with the safety, practice with it, grow, decide you don't need a safety, get another kind of gun, carry one in the chamber. We'll mention that in a moment. Yep. All these sorts of things, the life cycle. But experienced guys out there realize that there is a life cycle. Then don't try to fast track men or women.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, don't try to fast track it. Understand that there's a life cycle to this. Yeah, so that's how to get guns.
And let me add this to what not to do, and we'll talk about this a little bit. Hey, I want to buy my wife a gun and go buy her a gun. Yeah. Because don't go buy her a SIG P238 because Shelby carries it. No. Get a gift card, buy some range time, and things like that. And I always think about the couple that we met at Sandpoint, Idaho at the prepping conference back in September. Cute, lovely little couple. And she raised her hand. She was so sweet. She goes, I'm new to firearms. What can you tell me? And I was like, first of all, I just said to her, welcome. And you can hear this on the Radio Free Redoubt if you go back to September. This recording was actually recorded. It's very sweet. And all of a sudden the questions came. And I looked at her and I said, okay, everyone here, she's new. If she goes into a gun store and somebody acts condescending to her, she's not coming back. If someone's a jerk to her, we've all been there.
By the way, this applies to guys. Walk into gun stores and they get there's something about gun store. It's this bizarre model of retail sales, which is to ignore people and be rude to them. And I don't understand how you sell guns. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. And she was asking those basic questions. I told her, you know, I was talking gun talk. I was even doing SIGs and Glocks. And she raised her hand. What's the difference? What does SIG mean and what does Glock mean? I mean, she's definitely newbie. And that's great. I'm like, that's odd. And I explained to her, they're brands. They are simply brands of firearms. And her husband even said, this is what clued me and goes, yeah, I wanted her to be armed, so I bought her a gun and it was pretty.
And by the way, I mean, good for him. I mean, he's doing the right thing. He thinks he's doing the right thing, but there's a better way to do it.
Wonderful intentions. I would say first thing to do is buy range time that includes renting firearms. So you have kind of the experience I have of going to a range and trying out firearms safely. I would say a gift card of some kind where you can, or that to some sort of range where you can do that or arrange for that. I think that's a great start.
Try before you buy.
Because
they're like jeans. And I can tell you guys, this applies to men too.
Yeah.
There are guns that I just don't shoot well. 1911s, they don't work for me. And they just, I mean, don't work to the point of, I'm telling you, that grip safety, they don't work for me. I'm not used to that.
Yeah.
So it is all that. So getting your first gun, and part of that isn't just going and buying a gun. It's training and really practice. Now, training has more of a formal sense to it, like getting lessons. And then practice is shooting a lot and having fun. Tell us about training that's out there and what all that's about.
I would say for women in particular, and I talk about this in my book as well, I refer to a group called Pink Ladies. It's kind of a female gun club. It's actually modeled after a really great national group out there that I advocate for, and I'm getting no perks for saying this. It's called the Well-Armed Woman, TWAW. If you just look them up, they have chapters all over the United States. And it's what Julie did in the book. Once a month training where you have class time and you also have range time, depending on the chapter. And that's what I would go to once a month for several years. And I got monthly, not just practicing on my firearm, but it evolves into training. And then it evolves into what you read about in the book too with Julie, where she knows, okay, I have 15 minutes, I have however many rounds, I'm going to go through these practice steps that I always want to practice. And yeah, it becomes a thing. At first, it's definitely like, I just need to practice with my firearm. Then it becomes more than that.
And I'd like to speak to the practice part. One of the things I love doing the most is taking new shooters out and shooting. And I am really good at it. I'm going to say that because here's how I do it. Start off with 22. I have a Smith & Wesson M&P 22 pistol.
It's really fun to shoot.
It is really fun and really light. And do that. And then keep going up. And tons of fun. And I will say to people, hey, just don't even try to hit the target. Just get comfortable with this. Here's 100 rounds. Get comfortable, because you're going to notice that when you start this, you're going to be a little bit jerky and anticipating the trigger. And then you're going to get comfortable with it and just have fun. Don't even try to hit the trigger. It's really important if you're teaching or someone how to shoot or breaking them in even, the fun factor, because shooting is a lot of fun. You know, if there's like try to hit that rock or whatever, or try to hit that can or whatever it might be, there's the fun to it. And don't think that in 45 minutes you've got to teach someone all the basics of marksmanship, because they're going to come back. They're going to come back for the fun. So have fun with that. Yes.
And let me add this too. And this is just a fun little plug. You and I are going to be at a book signing at Beaver Creek Armory on January 12th, 2019. And kind of the fun thing with that is that people will get to meet a woman named Hannah. She is the model. She is my inspiration for the character of Ash in book one. And she runs a female only group at out of Beaver Creek Armory. So another, just if you're planning to come to that, bring the lady in your life and have them meet Hannah. And she is an NRA certified instructor, high up in those ranks, because there's ranks to that, high up. And she's fun. And you were saying, you and I had talked about it earlier, women teaching women, there's a special kind of sauce that goes with that.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of men trying to teach someone they're close to, wives, girlfriends, mm-hmm. daughters even, and all you've got,
it's okay,
but don't expect it to go well automatically. Think about having fun and all of those kinds of things. Yeah. I mean, work it into it. And well, we're gonna take a break here, and we're gonna come back, talk about the four-gun battery training and practicing with your four-gun battery, and then Valhalla Paradise. I don't need any more guns, being the sixth stage. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the life cycle of carrying. So please join us when we come back. We've only begun. The good stuff is going to keep rolling.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
All right, preppers, we'd like to take this moment and recognize some of our great sponsors. So let's see, looks like this segment is available. Yep, this space is available for you. It's reserved for a patriot, prepper, freedom-loving company who has a product that would interest our listeners and would be proud to partner with us. To reserve your ad space, contact Shelby Gallagher at shelbygallagher321@gmail.com. That's shelbygallagher321@gmail.com.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
Do you need a custom Kydex holster or magazine holder? Glenn Tate's favorite custom holster and mag holder maker is Northwest Retention Systems. You can select your holster or mag holder color, including the I Miss America logo, and Northwest Retention Systems will custom make yours. While you're at it, look into the Scout Chest Rig Holster. Glenn loves his for vehicle operations and for fishing. Made by a young craftsman supporting a growing family of young patriots, Northwest Retention Systems products are 100% American-made with no foreign parts. Find out more online at northwestretentionsystems.com.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MXT 100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required and no test needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. Waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always-ready, always-charged grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60 Ah internal battery, the Operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple one-button communication when it counts. Our two-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up. To learn more, go online to portableuniversalpower.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
And we're back. We are back in the second half here of Episode 6, Life Cycle of Gun Ownership. We're going to cover points 3, 4, 5, and 6, which are number 3, four-gun battery. Number 4, training and practice with your four-gun battery. Number 5, the fun stuff, personalizing and collecting. And number 6, I don't need any more guns.
I'm stuck at step 5. I want to stay there.
I know. No one wants to go to number 6. Yeah. So the four-gun battery, you hear this a lot in the prepping world, and we're just going to touch on it, and you should Google it.
Yeah.
Get on the Googles, as the kids say. Get on the Googles.
Get on the YouTubes.
And four-gun battery is what you pretty much need as a prepper, well, pretty much need for a variety of uses for hunting, too, and for fun. Don't forget the fun.
Well, and it's meant to be kind of this four-gun bare minimum arsenal to cover all your needs.
Exactly right. Exactly right. You could certainly expand on it. So the four-gun battery, in order of what I think is the most important to get priority-wise, would always be a pistol. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is it's concealable. It's the one gun you can take anywhere. Yes, there are limitations on pistols, range and power and all of those other things, but you've got to be able to, in the situation at the zoo,
yeah,
or the situation at the Port of Olympia with the scumbags, you know, you've got to have that gun all the time on you with you. That you just do.
Yeah.
And so that's why you need a pistol. By the way, in some prepping environments, we may not have a permissive environment. We may have situations where you can't openly carry a rifle because you will be shot either by the government or gangs, or it doesn't matter who's shooting you because you're still getting shot.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it's to conceal. The next one would be a rifle. And there's, when I say rifle, I don't mean, you know, your dad's like 30-30 lever action. Although that's fine if that's what you can afford and that's what you have. Those only, they hold a few rounds, 7-8 off the top of my head. Not the best. By rifle, what I really mean is an AR-15. There are other rifles out there that are great. I'm a huge fan of AKs. I have a bunch of them. We'll get
yes,
to
he
that.
Does.
Exactly.
Yes, he does.
And so, and we're not going to get into the AR versus AK
no.
thing. I think though that for a beginner, for the one rifle you need, You can't go wrong with an AR-15. Very easy to shoot. Ammunition and magazines are everywhere. Spare parts are everywhere. There is a convenience store out here in the country where we live where you can get AR-15 parts for reals. I went in there to get gas.
Wow.
Might have got
well,
a
and here's
group.
The thing. And we know that that is, if you are ever, just not to rush anyone, but the government's coming to get the ARs. So
yep.
Get them while
get
you
them
can.
Now. Yeah. Get them now. Exactly. AKs are fine rifles. They're harder to shoot. The safety's on a weird side. It's not a beginner gun. Once you've got the rifle part down with ARs, AKs are awesome. They have strengths. They're very, very durable and all of that. So four-gun battery, pistol, rifle. The next gun in the four-gun battery would be a 22. Sometimes a pistol, although I'm a bigger fan. You've already got a pistol. That's gun number one. I'm a bigger fan of a 22 rifle. The best-selling 22 rifle in the history of the earth is obviously the Ruger 10/22. You have one. Yeah, Ruger 10/22 into this
partnership
of ours.
Yes.
And I have a Ruger 10/22 that is amazing. You can't go wrong. 10-round box magazine or the 25-rounders. Very accurate. Relatively inexpensive. Off the top of my head, I think a Ruger 10/22 is $250 or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, mine was south of $300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And of course, 22 ammunition is everywhere. 22 ammunition is cheap. It is easy to carry a bunch of rounds. Don't forget that either. You know, it's, oh, I got the, you know, 338 Lapua. Oh, okay, $3 a round, and you can carry about, you know, 20 of them. And it weighs as much as 500 rounds of 22.
Yeah.
22 still kills people. I mean, you know the statistic. More people are killed with 22s than any other kind of gun. That's usually due to accidents and other things. But 22 is a legit caliber, not the most awesome. But you see, you want that smaller caliber. One of the specific things you want from a 22, in particular a rifle, is the ability to take small game without blowing it all up.
Yeah.
Now, you take an AR round on a squirrel, and that's like hamburger mist. I mean, that's not
true.
Really edible. 22s are good for pest control. 22s are good for marksmanship and all of the other stuff. I'm a big fan of 22s for a use that I don't hear talked about that much, and that is what I call the wives and girlfriends gun, and that's or kids gun. You can hand a 22 to someone who's small, who maybe doesn't practice a lot, can't handle the big caliber, and these are auxiliary people. This is mm-hmm. this is grandma who's cooking, you know, or canning some peaches, and a bad guy walks in, and she takes a 10/22 and dispatches the bad guy. That's
yeah.
what we're talking about, and that's a very legitimate role. So,
when I will
yes.
say this, my oldest son, when I the first time I took him out shooting, he just doesn't like handguns, and that's fine. He's a rifle kind of guy. I handed him a 22. He's not a gun guy. Picks it up, boom, bullseye.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, he's a rifle guy.
Yep.
Right. Seriously.
Exactly. And 22s are a whole lot of fun. That's one of the things.
Yeah.
Don't ever take the fun out of this. Don't turn this into some science thing or some checklist. 22s are so much fun. My favorite gun in my arsenal is a 22. It's an M&P 1522, which is,
this is fun.
An AR-15 that shoots 22.
So stop for a moment. Listen to what he just said. It's an AR-15 that shoots 22. So I'm going to get a little bit in the gun woods here. I had to buy a $160 special bolt to retrofit my AR so I could shoot 22 through it, because it's a lot cheaper to practice and shoot 22. This is awesome. Keep going.
And I'm glad you brought that
yeah.
up, because Prepping 2.0 is all about new technology and prices coming down and new stuff being out there. So Prepping 1.0 was, you did what I did, which was to have a drop-in bolt for an AR-15 that shot 22 long rifle. That was about 10 years ago, and that's your one choice. Fast forward, now we've got Smith & Wesson M&P 22s, M&P 1522s,
yes.
correction, M&P 1522s. I don't know, what was that, like $300? I mean, it's a fully functional AR. The safety's the same, the action's the same, the mag release is the same, the feel is the same, the accessories work on that 22 the same as an AR-15. It's an AR-15.
It's an AR-15 that shoots 22. So you get a lot of good rifle practice at cheap 22 prices.
It's a gateway drug for kids, too. The real Joel, her son Joel, you know, a brick of 22 and an AR or a M&P 1522, and that was a darn good afternoon. And that kid's hooked. I mean, he was already hooked, but
yeah,
that's the thing. So anyway, that's 22.
So that's one of those add to the collection after you get your first four of the four gun battery.
Well, I'm saying the 22 could be an.
It could be. It could be the 1522.
22. Yeah.
Absolutely.
The next one in the four gun battery is my least favorite gun. Well, other than 1911s, shotguns. Shotguns are great. Let's talk about why you need a shotgun. Couple things. One, they're the do-all guns because they've got ammunition of varying types that does everything from birdshot to shoot birds, as the name implies. By the way, birdshot is really good for home defense because it's still it's a fistful of lead flying relatively fast, so it still works great for self-defense. You can put rifled slugs in there, which are big, gigantic hunks of lead, and they go through cars pretty good, and deer.
They go through big game, bigger game.
And if someone's wearing body armor, you're probably going to knock them down pretty good because just the mass times velocity squared is going to put them down. May not,
take
puncture them, but it's gonna knock them out and all that other stuff. Of course, there's buckshot, which is phenomenal. Double-aught buck is 9 .38 caliber, basically balls, so it's like 9 rounds of a .38 coming at you all at once. Number 4 buck is 27, off the top of my head, 22 caliber lead balls flying at you, so it's like 27 shots. It's a little bit slower, but anyway, you get the picture. You can do a lot with that kind of stuff.
Well, and I got so when I went shopping for a shotgun, because I did have the four gun battery, here's the cool thing. And this is what I bought for this very thing, because I wanted the option for hunting and I wanted the option for home defense. Home defense, typically you want a shorter legal barrel because you don't want to be swinging this long firearm. You want to be able to be a little bit more tactical. Mossberg, and there's lots of them out there, but I bought a Mossberg that came with an interchangeable barrel so that I could, when I'm at home with it, I have it ready to go for home defense so that when the bad guy's on the other side of the door, the sound of a shotgun racking.
It's good. It's not going to save you. Some people rely on the racking alone.
Nope, you need
like
to,
empty gun, they rack and then.
Then you're done.
Then
if you're
going to
rack it, that's.
You're Joe Biden telling people to do that through the door.
Oh my
not
God,
you,
it's ridiculous. But, yeah. That is, honestly, to me, that lands in the four rules of gun ownership. Do not fire. If you don't know what you're doing, don't do it. So racking it, that is a show of force, and you better be ready to then fire. But so what's nice is that I think I got that firearm for like two something.
Mossbergs are awesome.
They are
very good shotguns. They make other things. I don't know anything about their other guns. Relatively inexpensive.
Interchangeable.
Rock solid. I have a Mossberg 590A1, very tactical shotgun that is a very specialized thing, very rugged. They're phenomenal shotguns. Another good thing about shotguns is how plentiful ammunition is.
And cheap.
And
cheap,
cheap,
cheap.
Exactly. Especially like right before duck season, you can get a case of, birdshot. Case is 250 rounds, $56 where I live. And it never goes bad. It's not like $20 pound, goat cheese that we were talking about earlier in another episode.
Yep.
And so everybody and their dog has a 12 gauge or 12 gauge ammunition. By the way, 20 gauge or 12 gauge, 12 gauge, just do the 12 gauge. The difference in recoil isn't great. I personally love 20 gauges. I have one. I like shooting 20 gauges way more than 12 gauges, but that's just because I'm in level number 5, which is, personalizing and collecting.
Well, and let me just do it because we've gone through the four. So if you think about that for just a moment, if you have a pistol, a rifle, and think about the descriptions we just said, a 22 rifle and a shotgun, you've really covered all your bases for hunting and defense and anything else, and not just defense in your home, but defense in your car, all kinds
defense
of...
defense on a team.
You've hit the spectrum.
That's what you need is the four-gun battery. You work up to it. I think you do it in the order that we just listed,
yes.
Pistol, rifle, 22, and shotgun. And that's part of the life cycle. Maybe it takes a year or two, whatever it takes out there.
Took me about five to give
years.
People...
Good.
To give people an idea. It took me about 5 years to get from start to finish on that. In my book, it took... I honestly had to speed it up. I had had it so that my main character got a very generous Christmas gift card sort of thing, and so it made it so she could buy several of these at one time. But I had to do that because I'm writing a book, and I needed it to not take 5 years.
Yeah. Chapter 704. The sun came up today, and the grass got a little longer.
And the shotgun arrived from heaven, yes.
So one of the things as you're building up this battery is practicing and yes. using and having fun and walking a beer can, as we called it, you know, where you shoot a beer can and it flies around and you go and you hit it again, doing that. So as you're getting these guns, you're practicing with whatever you have. So you get a pistol and you're practicing with your pistol, and then you're saving up your money, and then you get a rifle, and then you shoot a lot of the rifle and you save up your money and you get the 22. You mm-hmm. kind of do that. So it's integrated. It's not just buying a gun. It's integrated training and practice, which is our next topic.
That's our next topic.
See what I did there? It's called a segue.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. Training and practicing with your four-gun battery. And I describe it this way. You need to integrate your systems. And I'll describe what I mean there. A pistol involves magazines. It involves a holster. That's where you put it. Do you put it in your vehicle? Do you keep it on your person? That sort of thing. That's part of the system. A rifle includes magazines, it you know, optics, maybe optics. Big fan of red dots for the distances most people deal with. If you're taking out elk at 450 yards, then by all means get something other than a red dot. But for what a lot of us do, red dot's good. They're variable power scopes. They go from one power, which is a red dot with a nice bright red dot, up to 5 or 6 power. They've come down immensely in price. Big fan, because then you have the red dot for clearing rooms on one power, and then you have up to 6 power for the longer shots. And so you're integrating your systems. You're figuring out how to carry this on your person. It's called EDC, everyday carrying. More on that in a moment. You're figuring out where to put these in your vehicle if it's legal.
In your home. Yeah.
In your home. And that's a key one too. Yeah, where you're putting them in your home. You know, taking into account kids, taking into account getting to them quickly versus, you know, maybe them getting stolen. And this takes a while. This evolves.
This does.
You know, you don't just, most people don't just put up their, you know, biometric thing that opens up in the wall, you know, spins around like in a Scooby-Doo episode or something like that, and there's a library back there. That usually doesn't happen, so you need to kind of integrate your systems. Well, I mentioned carrying and EDC. There's an evolution of sorts with that. Would you describe, Shelby, how you evolved in your everyday carry from what you started with to where you're at now? Because it's part of the life cycle of gun ownership.
And I think it's different for men and women. Because women carrying, and we touched on this earlier, it's difficult because you have to hide stuff on. I know we both got, both of our phones just kind of went bzzz all at once there. Anyway, to carry on a woman is difficult because of our clothing and our curves and all that. So I went from carrying in a purse, which I don't like to do.
I don't either. Just kidding.
There you go. Mainly because, and this is an evolution, so I'm just describing to you reasons and why. So if you're listening to this, don't send me the email saying, oh, why not? And keep in mind, I carry a carry purse. The purse I always carry has the ability to have a firearm in it. So
and hidden. You can't
And hidden.
Tell.
You can't tell. So carrying a purse initially, and then I'm trying to figure out how to get one on my body. And the reason being is like right now, my purse is behind me about 2 or 3 feet. And for me, a bad guy comes in the room right now, I can't get to it. Excuse me, just a minute, sir. Can you, before you assault me or whatever, I need to get my purse one sec. That doesn't work. When it's on your body, it's that much closer. So I went from purse to then finding the holster. And as a woman, that's so hard because to find something that you can conceal. And so this is a whole nother episode. We'll talk about this more in the future. But I do both now, depending, basically, if I can't carry on my body, or for whatever reason, I will carry in my purse. I do encourage people to go to my website, A Great State, and look at the, I did a blog post recently called What's in Shelby's Purse? And it talks about all the things that I carry in my purse. And I do touch on holsters and purses and things like that. But you need to. What is your typical wardrobe? How often are you in places where you can't carry, courthouses and schools and things like that? And you have to plan around your personal life. I think that's a good place to start.
Well, you mentioned holsters. A couple things about that and the life cycle of gun ownership. Every gun owner who has a fair number of guns has a box, either a big one or a small one.
I think it's a dresser.
Holsters. Yeah, of holsters. Some fit, some don't, and there's no way to know until you try it out. With one exception to that, Kydex is a wonderful thing. It is this hard plastic material, basically, that can be molded to fit very tightly on guns. And then there are all kinds of cool, like, belt clip things now that are really, really functional and good. I think that the days of having 12 leather holsters that didn't fit a particular gun are over, because Kydex pretty much does the trick.
Yes.
And I have to put in a plug. This is a friend of mine. I get no money for this. Northwest Retention Systems.
Yes.
Northwest Retention Systems. Google him. A guy I know in another part of the state. He's got four adorable little kids. He's working himself, you know, really hard, and he's making holsters and good holsters. You can carry a gun really well in a Kydex holster. They don't come out and all that. Another thing about the evolution of carrying, this applies to me, and you've talked about it too in your books, is the whole safety issue, like thumb safety kind of issue, and then the one in the chamber issue.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Why don't you cover the safety issue, and I'm going to talk about the one in the chamber issue.
The safety issue, the thumb safety. What a thumb safety is, for those of you who are new out there, interesting, I go back to the lovely lady in Sandpoint. When I was talking about having a thumb safety, her hand went up. What's a thumb safety? Thumb safety is basically, it's kind of like an emergency brake-ish on your firearm. It won't fire if the safety's on. You can have one in the chamber, and it won't fire. So it's funny, when you first tried out my firearm, you're like, why won't it go? Oh, it's a safety on it.
See, I shoot Glocks that don't have safeties,
right,
for a very particular reason, because I hate safeties. And when I get in a gunfight, in a nanosecond of decision-making, I don't want to flip a safety. I don't spend an hour a week on the range like I should working on a gun that has a safety.
Right.
Now, with an AR-15, every time I put that up to my shoulder, my thumb is resting on it, I know if the safe is on or off, and I will shoot a couple rounds, turn the safety on without even thinking,
yep,
run to another piece of cover and flip the safety on and shoot again and flip the safety back on. So I've got it down with an AR-15, but you need a safety on an AR-15,
yes,
or an AK. But pistols, I hate safeties.
Yes.
And it's an evolution.
It
Where
is an
are you
evolution
at now
because,
on the safety
well,
issue?
Yeah. So this is how I carry, and you'll talk about this in a moment. I carry one in the chamber with the safety on. Where I'm at now is like, I've tried your, I'm sorry, guys, I don't know all the Glock numbers, but a Glock 380, essentially.
Yes, a Glock 42.
A Glock 42. I have tried yours out. I like it. It feels very much like the SIG, and I'm like, I think I could do this. I could do, and I don't feel like I need that safety anymore. I know, because I've carried a firearm for so long, I know what I'm doing. So,
and it's the same thing,
yeah,
with one in the chamber. A lot of people start carrying, and this obviously only applies to semi-automatic pistols. Revolvers don't have this issue. Carrying one in the chamber, and that means you've racked the slide. And
it's ready to go.
It is ready to fire. Now, if there's a safety, there's that, but if there isn't a safety, it is ready to fire. A lot of people, including me, I started carrying an LCP, Ruger LCP, the teeny little 380s that were the bomb in 2008 and now are no longer the bomb. They have about an 11-pound trigger pull, which is ridiculous. But now LCP2s are out, and they're really good guns.
Yes.
See, there's new products.
There's new products all the time.
That's why we're hitting the refresh button here on Prepping 2.0. But I wouldn't carry one in the chamber because I didn't fully appreciate how safe it is to carry a gun. Caveat to that, it's safe to carry a gun in a holster. You have to protect the trigger,
yeah,
from like your car keys getting it. If you carry a gun without a holster, would you quit listening to this show? Because you're just going to run off and go hurt yourself. You absolutely must have a holster.
And that's
cover.
And the holster isn't just to have, like, you know, it's not like
carrying
your cell phone carrier,
yeah,
where it is to protect it so that it's to protect it so that it is safe on you. Yeah,
exactly. So that's one in the chamber. And I went a couple months without one in the chamber. All the gun guys I knew were like, you're a dope. Why are you carrying without one in the chamber? And then I started carrying one with the chamber, and now it always went in the chamber.
And I will say this, I didn't realize that there's kind of controversy with one in the chamber or not. I'm not going to join that controversy. And I saw it at Sandpoint. There was like some contentious, not, and it wasn't bad, but just some uncomfortable discussions.
It was like Ford Chevy.
I mean, it was like
carry one in the chamber. No way. Well, why would you?
Would you do that? It's like stop. I'm not going to join that discussion. You carry how you can comfortably, and not just, more importantly, safely carry. If you're not comfortable with one in the chamber, for the love of Pete, don't do it.
Carry a gun, but don't carry one in the chamber.
Don't put one.
Carry a gun.
Carry a gun always. But if you're not comfortable carrying one in the chamber, don't.
And I would add to that, yes. However,
learn,
get over it, because if you want to horrify yourself, get on the YouTubes, as the kids call it, and Google's the examples of like video surveillance, like from convenience stores and stuff like that,
where that has
of people who don't have one in the chamber
and they're fumbling because they're nervous and scared,
they're trying to remember, and their attention is on this rack, and they're trying to think, oh my goodness, this slide, I should say, have I racked it or not? And they usually end up bleeding out. It's horrible.
So those split seconds that you need for flipping off the safety and racking one. So I will say this, don't do it unless you feel you can do it safely and comfortably, but don't disengage from the evolution, because your comfort will come with that, your feeling of safety. Keep learning, keep training, because you will get to that point. If you stop, then it's going to be like you just said, get there. You need to get there.
Exactly. And if you're a gun person, gun guy, and somebody that's coming along this evolutionary scale is not keeping one in the chamber, be gentle.
Yes.
How about this? Say, hey, let's watch some YouTube videos of people needlessly dying because they're doing what you're doing. Okay.
Well, that may not be it. But just say, hey, I know as we continue to train, you'll get there. So we have a few more minutes left. Let's talk about vehicle and homes.
Yeah, vehicle stuff.
You're good at this.
In my state, yes, you can carry a loaded pistol in your vehicle as long as, number one, you have a concealed pistol license, which I do. Wish I didn't have to, but blah, blah, blah. And it has to be out of sight. And then there's a third thing on that I would add. It needs to be locked up so it doesn't get stolen. Remember the old, well, I don't know how you grew up. I kind of do, but where I grew up.
People had guns in their.
Gun racks. Yeah, everybody had a 30-30 and a 12-gauge on a gun rack. You don't see gun racks anymore.
No, you don't.
As in like zero.
Like in the back window of the truck.
Yeah, easy to break and take. So always think about that. Your gun obviously has to be a pistol in a vehicle. It has to be in a holster. You can also keep rifles in trucks, a little bit more unwieldy. I have a AR-15 pistol, which is a very small AR-15 that isn't super accessible, but is pretty accessible. And that's for if things get really bad. So doing that. And then home, obviously, you know, we talked about this a few minutes ago. There's the kid factor. There are some really cool products now.
Yes.
Like this beautiful, like piece of wood, like it
artwork.
Looks like a flag artwork thing.
It's a gun
and
case.
It's got an RFID chip, and you swing it, and it goes zip, and it opens up.
It's the Scooby Doo thing.
Zip. Do you like that?
I do.
That was not a sound effect. That was my voice. And there's and it's got room for a couple pistols. You can get them that are big enough for an AR-15. Again, new products that are out and things that have changed. So
well, and let me add really quick to this, because I know we're kind of getting to the end here. Think about as you put small. I'm a big proponent of putting small safes around the house with firearms in them, so that you can be anywhere in your house and be able to get to a firearm within under 10 seconds.
Yep.
Because what you don't want is to be in the upstairs bathroom and bad guys on the lower floor and all your guns are on the lower floor.
Exactly.
So think about that. And that's a whole nother show, but I want to just throw that in there. So we need to get to number five.
Personalizing and collecting. I kind of
talked a lot about that.
When I was talking about, you know, red dots, and there's like four grips, and there's cool stuff. There's night sights. That's when you're in the real fun zone, in my mind, of guns, because now you're really making them your own. You're collecting some. I have some guns that are not terribly practical. Every gun I have is relatively practical.
Some of them are painful.
Yeah. to shoot. But you start getting the guns that you kind of want to get, and that's part of the life cycle, part of the fun, part of the ones to share or not to share. But I mean, that's where you want to be. Well, the last stage, and we have a few more seconds of the show, we didn't give much time to, because it's mythical. It's a unicorn thing. It never really happens. It's like socialism actually working. It's a great idea. It'll never actually happen. And that is, I don't need any more guns.
Well, I would say this too, as we're starting to feel the political world change before us, and certainly gun control really encroaching, you can't have enough guns. You really can't.
Exactly. You can't have enough guns. So there you go. That's the life cycle of gun ownership. This is Prepping 2.0. This has been episode 6. This has been a fun journey to go through that life cycle. We hope you got something out of it. And we really hope you come back and join us again for our next episode. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.